Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. Joining me in the studio today,
Bill Timmerman. Good morning, everybody.
My cousin Tino Sear.
My beloved co-host.
beloved. I like that.
Yeah. We were talking about clarity before the show, folks, since I'm getting over the flu, I have a good excuse for being unclear today. So if I sound like a foghorn and I can't remember my name, it's the flu. It's not my memory going. We want to talk about taxes today, the subject that everyone loves not to talk about. And last week we talked about what government is good for.
So it's
we got to that topic before. Mike and I did it a few years ago. We talked to Lane Kenworthy, and last week we talked about it again. But today we want to focus on how you pay for government. Conservatives are fine saying there's no such thing as a free lunch. Well, if you want all the things that government provide, then you have to pay taxes. And we have that quote from Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr., who said, "Taxes are the price we pay for a civilized society." Justice Holmes is the fellow, and in high school you hear it all the time, and it's the famous quote about the First Amendment: "The most stringent protection of free speech would not protect a man in falsely shouting fire in a theater and causing a panic." So if you're wondering who Justice Holmes is, he's the guy who said a lot of things like that. Fascinating individual. I don't know much about his politics. The other quote that we used years ago, you have the one from Abe Lincoln. This is one of our favorite quotes about government. So we want to talk about what government is and the role taxes have in supporting it.
Yeah. Lincoln said the legitimate object of government is to do for a community of people whatever they need to have done but cannot do at all, or cannot do as well for themselves as what government can do in their separate and individual operations. This is Abe Lincoln. I mean, this is common sense, folks.
This is the core of government, right? Yes. This is the core of government. And let's just read it again.
This is
the legitimate object of government is to do for the community of people whatever they need to have done, but cannot do it all. And then Lincoln adds, or cannot do as well for themselves.
Right? Well, you might ask yourself, what exactly does that mean? Well, just to give one example, if you're going to build an interstate highway system, there's no corporation on earth that can make the size investment you need to build an infrastructure project like that. If you left constructing the interstate highway system to private industry, what you would have is a bunch of roads of different widths in different places, and they would all be charging you tolls to drive on them, and it would be a mess. So what you do is you tax people, and then you spend the tax revenues, which are considerable in a country the size of ours, and you build this system, and then everybody benefits from it, including the corporations who couldn't afford to build it themselves. If you drive on Interstate 10 between Phoenix and L.A., you'll notice that about 40% of the trucks on the road are from Walmart. Walmart couldn't have built that highway system, but Walmart needs it to be Walmart. One of the things taxes will do for you.
And government got into this very early. They helped build, everything from the Erie Canal to we have all these things celebrating the robber barons. We hate them and we love them. But what doesn't seem very exciting is the role of government in producing the amount of money needed to build the railroad. The government gave the railroads land on each side of the tracks, considerable land, and that helped fund it. It was a government-private project like so much in American history.
Yeah, well, what they understood was that railroads would never recoup the expense of building the railroads from the revenues from the traffic that they carried. So what they did is they gave them the land on either side of the tracks, which is where the real money was. You build the towns and you collect revenues from the people who build businesses on your land.
Stealing this from Clay Thompson's column in the Arizona Republic, but back in 1885, when the Prescott territorial government was deciding where to put the university and where to put the insane asylum, Tucson wanted the insane asylum because along with it came government funds of $100,000. And what they got was the university. They put the insane asylum in Phoenix. Now, I'm using those old-fashioned terms, folks. The mental hospital in Phoenix is not nearly the economic engine that the University of Arizona is in Tucson right now. You talk about what government has done does for communities.
So government does the things that we can't do individually for ourselves. Even huge, and as Bill is saying, even huge corporations can't build an interstate highway system. They can't build the railroads on their own. They can't build the docks. They can't build any of the infrastructure. And infrastructure may bring more wealth to the robber barons at the top.
Exactly.
But it brings wealth to everybody involved.
Well, a good example, Apple Computer has the largest store of cash of any corporation in the United States right now, about $137 billion as of 2012. That's cash and treasury securities and so forth, but basically that's a big lump of money. But when you consider that the defense budget is $711 billion a year, I don't think that Apple Computer could provide for the common defense.
So government is stepping in to do the things that individuals, groups of individuals, corporations cannot do or cannot do as well as the larger entity. So when we pay taxes, we're putting money into a fund that we use to do all the things. Now, if you have a tyranny, the dictator is on top, the dictator decides how the money's spent. But even a dictator, if you take Saddam Hussein, who's basically a sort of secular guy, toward the end of his regime, he's building mosques everywhere. Even an absolute dictator has some response to public opinion. But when you have a democracy, then we collectively decide how the money's spent. The problem is that our democracy is distorted, Mike, right, by a lot of different economic and social factors. For instance, if we have slavery, the slaves don't get a say in it. If we have workers who have no right to organize or speak out, then people are left out of the system of how we decide to spend our collective resources.
Is Bill going to tell us why the thinking stops? We know taxes do great collective things and move civilization forward. Why does public thinking stop at that? That taxes are bad.
Okay, we're going to have Doug Amy on the show next month, who's done the website, Government is Good, Taxes are Good. But I think his first thing, and we'll let Bill talk about that, is there's a disjunction between what government does and collecting the taxes. In other words, collecting the taxes is very physical. The thousands of things that the government does tend by their nature to be diffuse, the road you're going to work on, so forth and so on.
Well, that's true, you have right now in the United States an ideological conflict. The right wing believes that government can't do anything right and that government wastes a lot of money and that we'd be better off without the taxes, without the government, because then, you know, corporations would be free to carry out business much more efficiently than government does and blah, 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 and so on and so forth. But the problem with that is that once you've gotten to the point where you've reduced the tax rate to the point where the government can't function efficiently, you know, then you're in a position to complain that the government can't do anything right. But if you first deprive the government of the tax revenue, then of course the government isn't going to function effectively.
The question is,
for example, meat inspection. Okay, if you do away with the inspection department and the Department of Agriculture, so that, you know, you have five inspectors to inspect every meat plant in the United States, then you can complain that the government isn't looking after your health because people start getting salmonella at McDonald's. Okay.
Good example, Bangladesh. You don't have government regulations. The current count in Bangladesh is 1,127 people were killed in an industrial accident.
Right, and that's all over the internet. If you don't like government, move to Somalia. I mean, life is so good there. There's a Jared Bernstein quote, a guy that worked for Joe Biden, one of my heroes. If too many Americans don't believe or understand what government does to help them, to offset recession, to protect their security in retirement and in hard times, to maintain the infrastructure, to provide educational opportunities and health care decent enough to offset the disadvantages many are born with, if these functions are unknown, underfunded, or carried out poorly, and I want to emphasize carried out poorly, because that dovetails right into Thomas Frank's wonderful book, The Wrecking Crew, and that the conservative appointments of the last 30 years and the conservative hires of the last 30 years bad government is good government. The worst government you can possibly have is what you want.
So we have less social services in the United States than countries in the EU, in Europe. And yet there's more support for government spending in countries that have much, much higher tax rates than we do. And one theory that I saw is that, you know, if you're in Germany, that your pension, everything is very, very visible. Here, Social Security will save you from starvation. It's probably more than you're going to get from anybody else. We have Medicare that'll keep you going. I don't think you folks will get these from your private employer, but by having more, they actually have more government, right? And then people appreciate more what it's done. We kind of hide, or we don't look at what's going on, Bill, Mike.
Well, I mean, let's look at it this way. First of all, German industry is certainly as competitive as the United States is. Their productivity rates are just as good. But they also have a mandatory 6 weeks of vacation a year. They also have free health care. They also have.
Yeah, I like 6 months off to have a baby, and dad gets 3 months off. I mean, you know, those are family values.
And they're in some problems now because of the euro. But if it wasn't for that joint currency, which they have, there's issues with there, their countries are doing pretty good. The productivity is close to ours.
Right? Yeah. Well, and the other thing is, you know, you hear right-wing claims all the time that the United States has the highest corporate tax rate in the world, yada, yada, you know. That's not true. I mean, if you look at Germany, for example, the total taxes collected in Germany by all their governments as a percentage of GDP is 37%. In the United States, it's
about 20%.
Yeah. Yeah, I lost my figure here.
And this is taxes as a percent of the gross domestic product.
That's the entire aggregate,
right,
of all the production and services in the country.
Right, it's fairly low. We live in a low tax state.
I think people are shocked, but that government, they don't want to face how important government is to keeping an economy going, to keeping a society going. But it is a fairly high percentage. It's not 5%. If you want the tax rate to be 5% of the GDP, you can go to Somalia, or you can go to some underdeveloped countries and stuff. But in industrialized countries, the more complex society, more people, the more money you need to glue everything together.
Yeah, I found the number here. The United States taxes as percentage of GDP is 24. Okay.
Okay.
So it's like 13% lower than Germany. In fact, of all the industrialized countries, it has the lowest tax rate as a percentage, total tax rate as a percentage of GDP of any industrialized country. Denmark is top with 48%.
So why do Americans hate taxes? Why is there a tax revolt here? Mike, where we're actually paying less taxes than almost any industrialized country in the world.
I can tell you. I got the answer.
Okay.
Because it's completely disingenuous. I mean, it's completely political. It is one side has found that that fear and misinformation has worked very, very, very well. I'm not sure that they invented it, but they are using it real well. And so when anybody reaches into your pocket, that at least that's the perception that they're reaching into your pocket. You know, payroll taxes.
That's
and all
the
those things.
The whole language is about the onerousness of taxes, about how they're taking your money. And the suggestion is you think of taxes as sort of dues, right?
Well, if you like schools and roads and cops and fire departments, yeah.
Well, I mean, this argument, for example, that if the government didn't tax us so highly, there'd be more money in the pockets of corporations, and these job creators would put us all to work, which the government isn't going to do. That's the argument.
As soon as the money comes back from the Caymans.
Well, let me tell you something. Let me tell you something here, folks. U.S. corporations, industrial corporations, non-financial corporations, this is not Wall Street, this is industrial corporations, they're right now, at this moment, sitting on cash reserves, they're holding this in cash, of $1.5 trillion.
I see that a lot.
This is not money they're investing, this is money that they're sitting on. Why are they sitting on it and not investing it? Why are they not creating jobs? The reason is because there's no demand, and there's no demand because of the collapse of our financial system in 2008 that raised our unemployment rate to 10%. It's now down to 7.8%.
The deficit,
but still,
you probably haven't heard, has been going down.
But still, there are an awful lot of people out of work who have no prospect for jobs. The corporations are still making plenty of profits because they're doing their manufacturing overseas, right? And they're still selling to other markets even if they're not selling here. So they're continuing to be profitable. Let's take one example. Apple Computer is sitting on $137 billion in cash. And at the rate they're collecting it, they now think that at the end of this year, that cash reserves will be up to $170 billion. So this is money that's either held in cash or invested in things like treasuries and, you know, securities of one kind or another that are not earning any interest. The money is just sitting there. Okay. So there's been a lot of pressure on Apple to spend some of that money, to invest some of that money. What are they doing with it? Well, listen to this. They have decided to do $45 billion worth of dividends and stock buybacks over the next 3 years, okay? But only $10 billion in direct investment. And of that investment, $1 billion is going to go to expanding their retail stores, okay? And $9 billion is going to building data centers, get this, and buying equipment for component suppliers, most of which are in China or Taiwan. So get this, right? The rich investors that are holding Apple stock are going to get $45 billion
in dividends.
And the direct investment, the job-creating part, is going to be $1 billion in retail. Everybody knows how much money you can make working in an Apple store, right? Or the $9 billion in the data centers, which after they're built have almost nobody in them, right?
Right.
They run pretty much by themselves. And the rest of it's going to go to China to buy machinery for them to make components for Apple stuff.
Well, you know, while we're straightening out Apple, it would be really nice if we could get them to stop calling. Even the geeks don't like being called geniuses, okay? Yeah, that's probably the worst PR move that they've ever. But go ahead. Get back to the
economics. Well, let's talk about what if some of that $137 billion or $170 billion were taxed away at an increased corporate tax rate and invested by the U.S. government in infrastructure projects that actually put people to work? Now, people who work for a living, people who make the median income in the United States, which nationally is about $50,000 a year, those people spend damn near everything they make, right?
That's right.
That's the difference. Rich people sit on the money,
right?
And people who work for a living spend the money, and the more money you spend, the more money circulates around, the bigger profits the companies get, and all of a sudden, guess what? You've got boom times, right? So
the oil companies are another example, right? Massive profits distributing to their stockholders. The latest figures I saw is that they spent $70 million donating to political candidates in the last election. They spent $50 million on lobbying. 90% of it goes to Republican candidates.
Right, and it's cheap. It's a cheap investment, they keep saying. They keep telling everyone it's crazy not to invest in lobbying because it's so...
Let's go back to this one issue. Naturally, nobody wants to pay taxes in one sense. And around the world, taxes, I mean, it's like having to pay dues to go to a club or something. You'd rather get it free, right? But you can't get it free because if everybody got it free, it wouldn't work. What else is going on? Why is there this virulent anti-tax movement? Why have Republicans ridden this to power? Why are they cutting government size more and more? Why do they want to drown it in the bathtub? What's motivating it?
Well, you know, look at the decline in the corporate tax rate over the past 50, 60 years. I mean, the effective tax rate for U.S. corporations in 1950 was 50%. It's been declining steadily ever since. In 2011, which is the latest I have figures for here, it was like 18%. That money, as you point out, is being used not only in lobbying, but in producing talk radio shows like Rush Limbaugh's, which try to convince people working for a living and making $50,000 a year that government taxes are confiscatory. But what they really want to do, right, is it's a power grab by people with a lot of money. The more money they have, the more money they can spend influencing what government does or does not do.
And they're using taxes as a leverage, because taxes is what people see. People don't, it's like the famous quote, I mean, I think we mentioned it last week, get your government hands off my Medicare. There's just no recognition of what government at all different levels are doing. And so they build up. And their motivation, I guess, is because if we don't have collective control of our resources, the more we limit collective and the control of the American people over our economic resources, the more the very, very wealthy have control of the resources. In other words, you're not going to replace government by nothing. You're going to replace government by a corporate oligarchy.
Well, corporations are famous for not paying the external costs, right? What we mean by that is that they pay only for what they invest only in what contributes directly to their profits. And the less regulation there is, okay, the less money they have to spend in generating those profits. So you get chemical companies in New York. Just to give you one example, chemical companies in New York who are doing really great, making wonderful profits. Then they move away, and guess who gets to clean up Love Canal?
Yeah, or the Hudson River.
Or all these Superfund sites, because they're not paying the cost of the environmental devastation that manufacturing creates when you don't invest in clean environmental practices in producing your goods.
Now, in the best possible world, people would do the right thing. The factory owner in Bangladesh would build a nice, safe factory, pay people decent wages. But it's not the best of all possible worlds. And so we have regulations. And I think just as we need taxes to have civilization, we need regulations to control what companies do. Because when we didn't have them, or you can look abroad, you can see exactly what happens, right?
Well, the real motivation for attacking, the government tax base is to cripple the government so that people who do own these corporations are not troubled any longer by paying the true costs of what they do. And they sell that to the working person by telling them that taxes are confiscatory, that it's their money and they should get to keep it. But then the truth is that these people are going to be living in a society where they don't have health care, they don't have adequate retirement. Nobody making $50,000 a year can save enough money to retire on. If he retires at 65 and lives to be 85, he's going to run out of money, even if he doesn't get sick.
So you have to admit
that's
it, folks. You're going to need government help. The government has helped all of us. And the government is not something really different from us. It's the expression of the American people politically. That's what the government is. And it has the same flaws that we have. It has the same distortions that our economy has. But the alternative, I mean, I went to both Catholic and also, public schools. It provides the schools. It trains the workers, so forth and so on.
Rubio is a perfect example of bad-mouthing the system that we operate, you know, rather than supporting it. And yet, admitting in another venue that he needed government support to go to school. He needs government support to take care of his mother. I mean, and yet in his speeches, in his Republican stump speeches, he is an anti-government, anti-tax maniac.
Can you send your kids to college, folks, without government loans?
Mitt Romney
can. Not Marco Rubio.
Mitt Romney can.
I mean, and that's the bottom line. It's time to be honest about.
And Mitt Romney got in the position to send his kids to school by using government money to support him when he was in school.
Not to mention the government subsidies for the businesses.
So there's hypocrisy there, and there's this huge campaign which seems to roll over everything else, right, guys? I mean, taxes are terrible. Taxes are bad. Bill quoted, corporate taxes have been going down. Income taxes have been going down. And the more they go down and the less obvious are, the more we get complaints, right? So what's going on, Mike?
Well, the more sinister of us liberals believe it's been a long-term conspiracy, and that's exactly, the Bush tax cuts, the corporate tax cuts, are just that. To cut off the supply and to have the entity, the government, run poorly and then have less and less government, quote unquote, in your lives. And yet there is no end strategy that I can see that the conservatives have other than the destruction of a functional government.
When you destroy the government's tax base, folks, you don't hurt the 1%. What you hurt is you.
I think that sums it up. I the thing, folks, is you can go on the internet now. It's so easy. I went and saw a Cato Institute writer for that when Bush was first putting his tax
cuts. Famous conservative think tank.
Yes, famous conservative libertarian think tank. And it's all very much in favor of the Bush tax cuts. And we know how much damage that did to the American economy. It is still damaging us today.
Oh, absolutely.
But what I thought was interesting was his first item was basically, what's mine's mine, and you can't have it. In other words, it was not the function of government or the function of taxes. It was this thing is, the first one is a political thing. We don't want you to have our money. It's all ours. Okay, couple of announcements.
Yes.
The door breakfast, Mike, this week, Thursday, 8 o'clock, Old Sedona Bar and Grill, $11 for breakfast, includes the gratuity for folks who serve. And Sandy Barr, who's
Sandy Barr from the Sierra Club.
Yeah.
We're having great turnouts to these folks. Nice crowds. Come down and meet some of your neighbors.
Yeah, and it's a good breakfast. It really is good. It's lots of fun. You get to eat all the stuff you don't eat every day.
That's right.
Load your plate down with bacon and sausages. Next week, we're going to be talking to Pride, gay rights group,
yes,
and PFLAG, which is a group of people who have family and friends who are gay and who want to support them. So we'll be doing that next week. The week after, we're going to have Eric Wright in, and Eric's going to be talking about envisioning real utopias, which I think is a really sort of exciting topic.
So join
us for that. We've got some good shows up. The third week, we're going to have Sandy Barr in, and she's going to be talking about what do we always talk about, Mike? Crazy Arizona legislature.
Right, especially as it pertains to the environment. And Sedona, the environment is a large interest here.
Just remember now, we pay our taxes, so you should pay yours.
The Democrats of the Verde Valley are another sponsor, and we're not meeting until August. We'll have possibly Felicia Rodellini, the next Democratic candidate for Attorney General. So thank you, Democrats of the Verde Valley, and thank you, guys.
You've
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.